Well, a very good evening to you out there. It's for the first ever February bank holiday Monday night here on TerraSock. That's quite amazing, isn't it? I'm Donal Barry, be with you until 8 o'clock this evening, and I'll be looking back at the weekend's games from our footballers, our hurlers, and from our ladies footballers earlier today as well, in the company of some of us, but the county's top analysts. And in the second hour, we'll have a special visit as well from the Munster Under 18 League Cup champions, and that, of course, is in the company of the Killarney Women's Rugby team, who lifted the Munster Championship yesterday. And just before we wrap up, we go back and we chat a little bit about rally as well, in the company of Sean Moriarty. So that's this evening's competition and everything. You wouldn't believe it if I told you my producer was trying to break my desk here. But, welcome, Ivan. How are you?
Good.
That's Ivan you hear in the background. It's not Liam Broston or John Kennedy breaking anything, because they're always here good and early. Liam, I was listening to you yesterday evening on the way home in the car with Joe, of course, and I have to say, Liam, you were like a Mayo supporter. You were
very upbeat, was it?
All you were short of Kerry for Sam. That's all we needed. The win at the weekend, I mean, is it a win that can potentially kickstart us to going somewhere, or do you think we're there already?
No, it's a win that'll potentially kickstart us, definitely. If we came away with a loss yesterday, there would have been a bit of pressure on the whole squad and management, because us down here in Kerry aren't very forgiving when we start losing, Donal.
Yeah. Could you sense that pressure before the game ever started? I mean, a lot of people in the stands, and they were kind of echoing that as well, we lost here, and Monaghan are good, and they beat Dublin.
And we're facing into Mayo and Dublin.
Absolutely, that was the talk. So, I mean, even before the game started yesterday, fans were nervous.
They were, yeah. And you could, like you said, you could sense that on the road up. But when the Cliffords, I suppose, were announced on Thursday night, or was it Friday night? What night? It was a Thursday night then. But you could see that Kerry, well, we said it here, myself and John, said it here last Monday night, that they were going to be on the bus. And Kerry seemed to be aiming, early last year. We were here last year and we were talking about being behind and all this kind of stuff. You could see there's a different attitude completely this year. And the league is very important for Kerry, not only to stay in it, but we're out in the championship in 11 weeks' time. That's 11 weeks' time. So we don't have a whole pile of competitive games, in that space of time. So every game we get has to be taken advantage of. And I think that's what Kerry are looking at. But yesterday's performance, from the word go, I was watching the warm-up. I even watched them coming out through the tunnel. I was down beside it. And you could see they were hopping. They were ready for road. And and they proved that in the second half. I thought the first half was a kind of a game that was helter-skelter, a very open game, both teams going at it. But in the second half, Kerry were very controlled. And that's why I was kind of upbeat, because I was upbeat last week after our game in Derry, because I could see there was green shoots there. We created opportunities, we didn't take them. I just thought Derry had probably a couple of better games played in the McKenna Cup than what we had in the McGrath Cup. But yesterday I was very pleased coming out of the Clonus.
Sounding like a Mayo fan.
Sounding like a Mayo fan.
Yeah, that doesn't go well for them. John Kennedy, you certainly weren't sounding like a Mayo fan. Coming out, was it SD in Tarbert, wasn't it? There was a bit of ruction there, was there?
Well, one of those days, Donald, but we leave it behind and move on, I suppose.
Huh? I heard the board of management are have full faith in you, John.
Continue on.
Come here, John. Pressure on managers. I suppose that's the link onto it. I suppose we mentioned, I suppose, Jack earlier in the campaign, a lot of the comments into this evening. And of course, you can contact us at 066-7123-666. Ivan is back at his seat. You can text us on 083-300-3300. The pressure on managers, it becomes intense after a loss. I mean, the loss to Derry, everybody, I'd say, that would have a fair mind about football would have said, yeah, Derry were stacked, Kerry weren't there. But again, the pressure would have mounted up. Was that pressure shown through to see that the Cliffords came onto the panel, do you think? Because Jack did say that, they were being given a break, they weren't coming back until the Mayo game, the whole lot. Or as players, do players know at a certain time, I want to get on, I'm buzzing, I'm fit, I'm raring to go? Was there a bit of that, you reckon, maybe?
Well, the first thing, they were training anyway, they were in the squad training, which is, that's they weren't brought in from the core, the Derry result, certainly, you look at the league and how competitive it is, I think it was important to get a result in Monaghan. If you were beaten above in Monaghan, you'd be in a relegation dogfight. You look at the second division, apart from Armagh and maybe to a lesser extent Donegal, you don't want to go down there, really. It's a big golf in standard. And I think for championship hopes, you need to be playing Division 1 football. This was, it was a result. Patchy enough first half, but, I suppose a few changes. Bringing on David, people will question coming on before half time, but he definitely steadied the ship. He took the attention of the Monaghan defence. Party coming on likewise, and then Tadhg Marley, and Liam said, the green shoots, Killian Burke, Dylan Casey, Joe Connor again quitted themselves well, and you know, sets us up nicely now. Like, the difference between victory and defeat is huge, because you look at it, if you beat Mayo, you're in contention then maybe for challenging for a position for a league final place. And I think maybe it could do us no harm to get to league final this year, because you look at what's happening in Munster. You know, there's no competition there. Mm-hmm. That's a good bit down the road, but it's still not that far away either. And you know, we need competitive games. But this was an important 2 points. The 2 points were more important than the performance, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, go up to Monaghan and win. It's always a tough place to go.
Yeah, and of course Monaghan, after beating Dublin as well in Croke Park as well, with a much changed team as well. Let's go back to the first half, Liam. Before the Cliffords, we'll say. The first 6 or 7 minutes was kind of cagey enough stuff. I mean, a lot of drop passes, balls going astray, Conor Gainey firing that wide, the Monaghan keeper kind of getting out past the Kerry forwards at his ease without being put under any massive pressure. But then there was that kind of golden spell when Shawnee got his first magic point, I mean, off the right. Then he followed up with a fantastic point off his left, which was fantastic. Dylan Casey, not for the first time, popping up into attack and scoring as well. Conor Gainey tapped over the point after another great run, of course, by Graham Sullivan, who's really getting up there as well. And that was like 5 points in a row. Kerry really, really playing well. But as a side to that, we were still fairly open in the defence, weren't we?
Very open, yeah. Defensively, it took us a while to get the grips, because this young guy, Stephen O'Halloran, and Ryan O'Toole was the cornerback. He's mm-hmm. the guy that got the goal. So positions meant nothing yesterday in the game in the first half. And every time the Monaghan guys got the ball, they dipped the shoulder, they went at us, and it was a game where there was a lot of one-on-one stuff going on. You know, so when you were beating your own men, you were creating space, and they were taking at the gaps, and we struggled for a while with it. I think Shane Ryan pulled off 2 great saves in the first half. The first save, I think, was in the 15th minute, and I suppose within 40 seconds Ryan O'Toole had the ball in the back of the net after, and it was just unfortunate, because after the save we went down and Killian Burke had a great chance one on one with the goalkeeper, but the underfoot conditions kind of got away from him, and Monaghan came down and hit the back of the net. But yeah, it was very, very enjoyable to watch it. As a neutral, I'd say it would have been enjoyable, but we were kind of pulling our hair out small, because
now, like that football that you're describing, that's the football fans like to see. It's kind of free flowing, kick it,
open.
Let's go open and a chase. But John Kennedy, in the real world, that isn't going to be the football come championship. I mean, nobody's going to get that much space. Kerry not going to score 5 points on a trot and then hand the ball over to Monaghan for the next 10 minutes and say, listen, have a run at us. It's going to be much more structured. So is Jack looking at players that can adapt to the directions of gameplay, or is he looking at these kind of players saying, yeah, I need an X factor somewhere as well, and I can find an X factor maybe in some open play?
Yeah, that's like, it was man and man yesterday. There was no swarm defence, and it was made easy while it was a tough battle up there. You know, you had when you beat your man, you were on, and like, that's why there were so many chances on both sides. A worry was our defence, you know, but I think, you know, they addressed it at half time. And bringing in Tadhg Marley, then certainly it steadied the ship, because his experience, his covering of space was very important, and that avenue up the middle was gone, and that has been there over the last number of years. We've said that numerous times, but I think the X factor is Joe Connor is back. He gives you a physical presence in the middle of the field. He's good in the air, great engine, and he's going to get better, because you know his confidence is growing. Killian Burke, delighted for him yesterday. Things didn't work too well against Derry, but you know, it was his first real taste of senior football, we could say, in National League. Took his goal very well after missing a chance. You know, he was wrong footed.
The penalty that he
correct exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, so he has the confidence to keep going, but he really buried that shot, and that was great for the confidence. But I think his work rate and his supplying ball and doing the simple things, very, very important.
But what I like about Kerry now with the last 2 games is we're kicking the ball. You know, and even if we're making a mistake, we're not changing our tactic, we're still trying to kick that ball in. But we know forwards like Shawnee Shea and probably David Clifford and all these fellas, we need to be able to kick the ball. And the only way we're going to break down mass defences is by kicking the ball, getting the ball going 40-50 yards. And we were doing that yesterday. Every time we came out of defence in the first half, we were looking up. Shawnee Shea was running the diagonal runs, the Gainies. You know, there was a lot of open play. And I do think we could still use that against a mass defence if we move the ball out of defence quickly.
And I think Shawnee's confidence is really up. The first point he got, Killian Neville, a very good fullback.
Yeah.
You know, he shimmy to go one way. He turned. He didn't even look. He knew where he was. A great score, you know, from the wrong side with his right foot. But Shawnee's in flying form, and as you say, Liam, the quality of the ball going in is very good. Diagonal ball yesterday, yeah, they were making it easy for him. And you had David Clifford in there, you had Paddy again, you know, and Killian Burke, his running, and then Dermot O'Connor coming from the middle of the field. We certainly have a lot of aces, and you know, nobody's getting carried away about one victory, but there was green shoots in the Derry performance. We created four or five goal scoring chances yesterday. We got three, and you know, while there was questions about the defence, overall you'll be happy with the performance.
So both of you quite happy?
I
would tender the question that Jack would have more problems after yesterday's game than the Derry game, because Derry didn't get a goal chance in the whole game. We gave up a rake of goal chances yesterday that weren't really taken.
Well, I suppose, yeah, but I suppose conditions against Derry didn't really allow for too many goal chances. Even we, and the opposite then is we got goal chances, sure, and we didn't take them. Whereas yesterday we did. We were just that little bit more. I suppose we were a little bit smarter yesterday, and that comes with games as well. You know, with the chances we missed against Derry, you're not going to miss them chances again. And we took them. And plus, look, the X factor, the two Cliffords came on, and they kind of calmed the whole situation.
Let's talk about the Cliffords, because the whole county wants to talk about the Cliffords coming on. The whole last, I mean, you said last week, if you were safe in Ambrose and the team would have to drive them, you'd make sure they were in the car with you. Look, they weren't in the car, because you would put them to work. Did you really change the tyre, did you?
We really changed the tyre. Yeah.
We being all three?
All two of us, myself and Timmy. Ambrose was kind of health and safety, you know, to be fair.
But he was supervising.
And I just recorded Timmy because I started laughing when he went put on the gloves. That's the reason why I recorded it in the first place.
That was my question too. Who put on the gloves? Change the tyre. My God,
his hands are precious. His hands are precious.
It took him a long time to get the wheel off.
Well, it didn't take that long for Jack O'Connor to put David Clifford on the field. 32 minutes came in. He arrived, Paddy arrived. Not surprising, Liam, they got a small bit of attention on their arrival.
Oh, it was the case. And you could see David was hyper. And you know, the yellow card he got was probably deserving.
He got it within 50 seconds,
yeah, because, look, he went in late with a shoulder, even though everyone's saying it was a fair shoulder, but the man had the ball kind of passed and he kind of drove him over the sideline. But David was laying down a marker. Look, he gets a lot of stick and he gets a lot of hassle himself, so he's well able to mind himself.
There was a bit of rustiness about him as well. I mean, obviously the whole country going mad now talking about the Clifford's having a bit of rustiness, but he took the free from Shawnee Shea. He missed the free.
He was eager.
He got overturned maybe once or twice before they got going, and it was really that first ball that he kind of stepped up with a nice flick to Shawnee that kind of brought him into the game. But he was always going to get a goal, wasn't he?
He was, and that's why I think Jack put him on the bus as well. Now, we were always looking at the Mayo game, but it's very hard to pull fellas out of the stand and just start them against Mayo. So I was always thinking that he was going to give the two Cliffords maybe 10 or 15 minutes in the Monaghan game, you know. And it was surprising he brought him on that quick in the first half, and people are saying it's kind of unfair on Ronan Buckley. But if you think back the week before, it was Sean O'Brien. Yep. So Jack is kind of laying down markers here that if you're not up to the pace, if you're not offering something, you will be called ashore.
Yeah. And does that, you reckon, come from the stats man sitting in the corner saying, yeah, after 28 minutes, player X has not ran enough or dropped too much or not involved in the play? Because in the old days, you would have waited till half time. Yeah. But now with so much, I suppose, on-field information coming into you, you're probably predicting that this particular player might cost you a point or 2 points or is that the process of how management is thinking now?
There'd be a lot of information like that, you know, because everything is stats now. But you could see Ronan was kind of he was kind of under pressure, and his man was doing a lot of attacking as well, you know,
because they were getting
down the field. So Ronan was kind of more of a defensive half forward than what he was doing his own thing. But you could see, I suppose, Jack wanted to change the game a small bit then as well, because when David came on, the whole attention and rightly so by the opposition team, there's always two or three watching him then, so it creates more space for the other players. And it just proved that Jack wanted to go up yesterday, and he was coming away with him 2 points no matter what.
John, we get to half time, 1-9 to 1-5. We kind of had our little wobble. Monaghan got on top for a bit. We recovered. But the second half performance, I mean, you still have to go out and win. I mean, 4 points up. How impressed were you with Kerry's second half effort?
Yeah, they're very impressed. And Shawnee started, he set the tone, kicked two great points, you know, early on. And then the goals followed. You know, I suppose the last goal was a bit fortuitous, okay. But the two other goals were well taken, great moves. But 'twas the over. overall play by Kerry, you know, Monaghan were hanging on there. We were always in control. We were never going to lose the game, but I think 'tis the way we played ourselves. And, you know, the way fellas like Graham O'Sullivan, then Tom Sullivan, you know, they came into the game. Jason Foley came up. They all wanted a part of the action. It was that kind of a game, Liam. It was open. But look, the second half, there was only one team in it. Monaghan were hanging on.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, obviously the virtuosis and goal was Dermot O'Connor, Tomo being in the right place at the right time. Don't move. Another man who almost got a goal, and you know, he had a very, I suppose, calming or steady influence, and important for him to get back in as well, because obviously it's his first game since the All-Ireland final last year, as well as of course with Paddy and David, was Tadhg Morley. Speak to me, how impressed we were with Tadhg Morley's last 20 minutes.
It was excellent, and that goal chance he had, no, he'll be kicking himself after it, but it was a fantastic move. It went through five or six hands. No, it was 1-2, 1-2. Next thing,
I'm sure he
probably didn't know where he was, and he thought he was open, but it was the wrong side, and he pammed it into. But overall, when he came on as well, you know, he filled the gap there between our full back and our centre back, and he sat there. Like, Tadhg is a guy that he can travel up the field, but he's experienced enough now that he'll hold and he'll let the other fellas do the running. When you have Gavin White and Tom Sullivan either side of you, you can hold and let the two boys be the runners then. But the one thing in the second half, what I did see was, you know, Stephen O'Hanlon caused us a lot of trouble in the first half. He was lively, but you know, Tom O'Sullivan shut him down completely in the second half. And what I mean by shutting down, you know, by Donald, is that he denied him the ball. When Monaghan got the ball, Tom was actually kind of marking him face to face, the way he wasn't an option. Instead of leaving him get the ball and then trying to worry about him was a harder job, whereas we denied it very, very early to him, and he couldn't get his hands on the ball. And I think Tom deserves a lot of credit for that, and not only that, he kicked 2 points as well, you know. So in the second half we had our homework done. All right.
We get it. You like Tom O'Sullivan, do you?
Well, I don't know. He played well yesterday.
And poor old Tadhg Morley.
2 weeks' time.
Tadhg Morley actually started life as a Kerry forward, believe it or not, not as a centre back or a full back. And sure, he'll always be remembered as the guy who almost scored Kerry's best ever goal.
That's right.
I suppose he'd want to take away the limelight from Jason Foley. Sure, Jason scored a point as well. Come here, that's super, boys. We will take your comments after the break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk, and of course we'll be catching up with Dan Carnadier around 6:30 this evening as well. The Kerry ladies' fantastic win today against Cork in the third round of the National Football League, 3-3 as well, and they're certainly flying. Some of the comments coming in, we'll read them out, and as normal, thanks very much for getting in contact with us. We'll read as many as we can anyway. I was just saying to the lads off here, it was amazing last week we lost, we had a rake of comments. This week we won, we're kind of down a few, so I suppose after winning, I suppose there's much to be giving out about. Now Donal, Kerry were outstanding yesterday, but maybe Monaghan were built up too much after their win over Dublin. Liam, I presume that's probably fair enough.
And look, I do think Dublin are probably in the same situation where we were last year.
Yeah,
you could see there
against
what have they done. They're a bit leggy as well, yeah, but they'll be improving.
Yeah, congratulations to Kerry from a Monaghan fan. It was great to see so many players after the game taking pictures with kids. It is only the league, but great to see an open attacking game of football. And that's back to what we kind of discussed earlier, that it was kind of that open attacking game of football. Did Jack O'Connor really need to bring the Cliffords on? They barely got a break. And I'm going to link that to the next comment, which is, as David and Paddy are way back way too soon, they've had no break at all. And I link it to the third comment. Well, here we're going. Why was David Clifford brought on 3 minutes before half time? Kerry did this the previous week as well. Why not make the sub at half time? And we kind of discussed that as well earlier, that I suppose it's down to kind of,
yeah, look, the olden days you would wait till half time and you would be giving a fella a chance, but not anymore. There's too much at stake now, and no, you're laying down, like I said, you're laying down markers anyway. And Jack won't hold that against Rowan Buckley. Sean O'Brien came on yesterday at the end of the game, so it's only kind of rattle the cage a small bit and see, yeah, can we get a bit more
and find an extra 5% next week. Did David Clifford and the Paddy back too soon, no break? They've got a good enough break, John, haven't they? In the short 6 months, you can't give them much more than what?
No, they haven't.
Their last game was the 19th. I looked at it, said 19th of November.
Yeah.
Was the last time. No, they played, I don't know, Cup a half a game the week after. But that's a long time off.
Yeah. At this time last year, you were saying, Jesus, they've had 900 games in about 2 weeks. Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to something else, another topic. We've coupled them together. Sean O'Shea is in the form of his life, Donal. His points from play were simply magnificent. Donal Shawnee Shea will have to play close to goal this year. He will have a massive impact in there. Shawnee Shea, we discussed it off air. I mean, he looks a different player, doesn't he?
He looks leaner, meaner, fitter, all those words. But not only that, the scores that he's kicking. You know, yesterday when the game was in the melting pot in the first half and Kevin got really on top of the stages, he was the man that kicked these outrageous scores. And you know,
massive confidence scores.
Massive confidence. A leader. Yeah. He's a leader. And I agree with our listener. I think the closer to goals, the better. But at the way he's playing and at the fitness he has, he's definitely an option if you wanted to bring him out around the middle of the field as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Donal, great to see the Clippers back along with Tadhg Morley. Really beginning to show and look strong now. And then, oh my God, here we go. Talking about the burst balloon, here we go. Give this one to John Kinn. This must be an Arkery fella. Not sure where all this positive stuff is coming from, lads. Our defence was open far too many times. Gavin White was turned over continuously trying to break out. And were it not for Shane Ryan and a brilliant block by Paul Murphy, we could have been in real trouble. We kind of tipped on that. Was that kind of open stuff. That's the kind of stuff that would worry Jack, I presume.
Oh, there's no question. We discussed that. Look, they had three goal scoring chances. You know, two great saves by Shane Ryan. But look, it's the league is about building and it's about improving. And we'll compliment them on their level of fitness, how sharp they're looking. But there's very little ball played. The McGrath Cup was probably
it didn't
do any good for us, really. You know, maybe the final against Cork, but look, it's a different level. I think nobody's getting carried away. Of course, Jack will look at that. I think he addressed it at half time. Second half was much better.
Yep.
And you know, it's always good to have something to work on. But Tadhg Morley coming back will make a big difference because he's the anchor man. Certainly, look, it's there's huge positives there, but. You know, it's not the finished article by any means.
Only round two of the league, too, I mean. Monaghan are not the same level as Derry, says one comment. In Derry's destruction of Tyrone shows that they mean business, so a loss to them last week, probably not all that bad without our full team. That's probably a fair comment, isn't
it? Yeah, and if you're listening to Mickey Hart's interviews, they do. He's going for it, yeah.
He's going for it. He wants momentum. Winning managers, John. Jack, of course, 2 years ago, I suppose. Now, the momentum that drives you on, it comes from winning games, doesn't it? I mean, it's very hard to kind of go through a whole year, not perform well, and then expect yourself to kind of win an All Ireland from the quarterfinal out and find momentum. So, momentum has to be found early.
Oh, it has to be found early. And look, Jack has said, he's made no secret, he's looking for a few extra players. And he's probably got two or three there, like Dylan Casey while he was there before, Killian Burke, Joe Connor back. But it's all about momentum, it's all about improving from game to game. And, you know, Derry we're talking about the Cliffords being played. Look at Derry. They've brought their full, the Glen guys back.
You know,
Mickey Hart is looking at winning every game. All these managers, look, they're all competitive, whatever level you're at, and they want to win and put down a marker. And, you know, the argument against it is, do Derry need to be in a league final with such a competitive Ulster Championship ahead of them? But look, that's the road they're taking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're top of the table at the moment. But your listener's right. We said that last week. The defeat to Derry, when you saw the Derry team, you wouldn't be too down about it, and the shoots were there that we did create a lot of chances.
And John, when you were winning then as well, it's a lot easier going training Tuesday night off a back of a win than a loss, and momentum, like you said, momentum.
And
is
no matter how bad, no, I won't say how bad, but no matter how disappointing Monaghan were maybe to some of the supporters, to go up to Clonus and win.
Yeah,
many teams don't do it.
Exactly.
You know, and like while they're missing a lot of household names, they still have a lot of exciting talent, and they beat Dublin in Croke Park the week before. No mean achievement, even though Dublin are only starting back.
Yeah.
No mean achievements. Great link to my next guest, Dan Kearney, of course, is on the phone. The Kerry ladies, of course, face off against Cork today. It would have been a fixture traditionally that would have kind of said, oh God, Cork are tough. But Dan Kearney, the result and the scoreline definitely tells a different story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kerry blew them away, Donal. They have 13 points win over Cork. You can't argue with that. 2-14 to 7 points. Phenomenal performance by Kerry, like, you know, and I suppose in the first half, you know, Kerry went in. Was it a 4-point lead? Kerry went in at half time.
7-3.
Very, very, 7 points to 3. Then with a very, very strong wind, and you'd kind of say, yeah, Cork are going to come at them now in the second half, but as it was, Kerry absolutely, the wind kind of died slightly as well, it must be said. No, the wind did die a bit slightly, but Kerry just blew them away in the second half. They were much too good for them, like. And, you know, it started, kind of, the game started slowly, really, you know, the first 10 minutes. It was level. Then Cork went ahead. Laura O'Mahony in the 14th minute, she put it over the bar, make it 3-2. And that was Cork's last score of the first half, and Kerry just blew away. They got 5 in the trot then, and took a 7-3 lead in the half time. And, you know, they just started the second half, all guns blazing, and just blew them away. And it was a great win. Got two great goals in the second half as well. Hanno O'Donoghue and Daniel O'Leary, who both played very, very well. Hanno O'Donoghue finished with 1-3. Daniel O'Leary off the bench, 1-2. Absolutely excellent performances. The Kerry forward line was really, really sharp today, and those two girls looked particularly sharp. And what I'd call a coming of age performance by Amy Harrington in the middle of the field. She was absolutely phenomenal, and of course she picked up the player of the match after. And she really, she's gone very, very strong, very, very fit. And, you know, she's definitely, she's only, 19, 20 years of age. I don't think she's 20 yet, actually. And, you know, she's one that's really stepping up to form this year, Donal.
Yeah, she went through an amazing amount of ball, actually, in that first half, holding it and carrying it and passing it and spraying it around. Let's go back to that, I suppose, first quarter, really. It's the quarter where, I suppose, Katie Kirk seems to be the only person scoring for Cork these days. She got her two frees. Niamh Carmody, obviously, off the mark. And Hannah Dunhu. Let's talk about Hannah Dunhu's performance, because, for Kerry, kind of going forward, we've talked about Carmody and Louise Mary Hurtig in the gone by, but Hannah's been in around the panel for quite a while, and she's a real industrious player. She had one off the bar, she had a wide, she had a kick across that she failed to get maybe, and then she can kick amazing points and took her goal really well. How important is it going forward for Kerry to have a real fit Hannah O'Donoghue performing at the highest level?
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on it there. Hannah's kind of been beset with injuries there the last couple of years, and it's kind of held her back. But, you know, she's got a clear run now, and of course she played very, very well in round two as well, but she was absolutely phenomenal today. Like I say, finished with 1-3. Very, very sharp. And the thing I like about Hannah this year is, you know, before in the past you might have said she was a bit headless at times. You know, she put the head down and she tried and take on players, and you weren't too sure what she was going to do. But now there seems to be much more structure to her game, without losing the bit of devil that she has. I thought she was excellent altogether. The goal was absolutely brilliant, really. If you think back at the goal that she got, long kick out from Mary Ellen and Bulger, it went around the halfway line, a tap down by I think it was Danielle. Harrington came on to took the ball on 20 metres, hand pass inside, and she finished it really, really well. Oh, that was Danielle's goal, actually. I might be thinking about there.
They were similar enough, to be fair.
Yeah, they were similar enough, to be fair, but absolutely excellent. Actually, no, that was Hannah's goal, all right. And, you know, she was really, really sharp today, and a fit Hannah O'Donoghue in that forward line is a huge plus for Kerry, it must be said. And, of course, you've Murray Hurtig coming off the bench then as well, grabbing a couple of scores as well. So there's fair competition there now, Donal. And, of course, they have a two-week break now until the Mayo game. On today's performance, any day you go out and you hammer Cork off the field like Kerry did today is a really, really good day. And do you know what? It's a bit early. We'd want to be like Liam Brosnan there turning into Mayo supporters or anything like that.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome, Liam. But no, all jokes aside, Kerry are looking very, very good even at this stage of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. They're 3 wins from 3. Cork are on the reverse, aren't they? Cork haven't won yet, have they?
They've won win, all right, yeah. I think they've won win. But they're in trouble. They're like you mentioned, Katie Quirk. They're their very first game in the league. She got all the scores. They only had two scores in their forward line today.
Yeah.
Quirk, I think she finished with 6 points, and Laura Mahoney finished with a point. So they're in big trouble. It was the first time in a long, long time that I've seen a Kerry team out muscle. Mm-hmm. A Cork team in terms of physicality. Kerry were much stronger, fitter than this Cork team, and Shane Ronan wasn't a happy man after, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it was nearly a reverse of how things used to be maybe 5, 8, 10 years ago, when I suppose Kerry would go to Cork and play so well for so long, but then in the last bit Valerie Cahill get a goal and 4 points, and the whole place falls down around you, and you look at the score and you lose by 10 or 12 points. But Kerry are getting to the stage now where they are number one best team in the country, surely. I mean, their league performances are fantastic. They seem to have a massive depth of quality on the playing pitch coming off the panel. I mean, they arrested Kelly Cronin as well today at centre back and survived. Ashling O'Connell was outstanding as well there, as was Eilish Lynch as well in around the corner back, and they brought on Lorraine as well, and as you said, Louise came on as well. So they are beginning to fill the places, but they also seem to have a second player for those positions as well.
Yeah, and it's great. I suppose it's all about strength and depth, like, really, isn't it? You know, that you have these players and that they're champing at the bit and they're putting pressure on other players. I mean, if you think about it, like, Aoife Delane there did nothing wrong in the first couple mm-hmm. of games, and Eilish Lynch was given her run today, and Eilish was absolutely fantastic. Like, she was magnificent. So, I mean, you have competition there. You're talking about Kayleigh Cronin, absolutely brilliant player. Where are you going to slot her in? Deirdre Carney, excellent again today, like, you know. So you have all these this competition for places. Mary Hurtig is coming off the bench there, like, when you think about it, and you Jaden Lucy got only a couple of minutes there today, like, you know. So, I mean, when you think of that, and Jaden was starting in the first couple of games as well, like, so there is fair competition there for sure and certain Donald, there's no doubt about it, like, and it's very positive and it's very good, like.
Absolutely, and I suppose to end with, it'd be remiss of us not to mention Mary Ellen's performance today. I mean, it was absolutely outstanding, particularly I suppose in the week, and I suppose the couple of months that she's had as well. A moment's silence for her mother, and then to go on and play outstandingly well.
Yeah, she was absolutely magnificent, and I suppose it's a testament to the girl that she went out, and her mother, from what I know, was an absolutely huge fan of both Southern Gaels and Kerry Ladies, and followed Mary Ellen everywhere and was a great support to her, and that's why Mary Ellen went out there today to honour her memory, and she did it so well. I mean, she didn't put a foot astray, she didn't put a hand astray. I suppose you could say she set up that last goal for Hannah O'Donoghue, that goal for Hannah with the long kick out. She was magnificent, and I think the players responded in kind for the gesture that she made playing today to honour her mother, and you know, fair play to her, and it must have been very, very tough, but she went out there and she did it, and she can be very, very proud, and her mother would be very, very proud of her.
Absolutely, and knowing her late mother and Nate, she would have wanted it no other way when she put her back out and playing, and look, all her sympathy to Brendan and the family and that big family of Southern Gaels back there as well, and our thoughts and prayers with Mary Ellen going forward as well. Dan, listen, thanks very much. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks when we have the visit of Mayo, just like the boys, so yourself and Liam Brosnan will have fans at least to talk about being Mayo supporters.
Just confident people, Donald. Don't be putting myself in Dan down over a bit of positivity.
Are you not all Dismans out there then, or there's some club on the border? That was Dan Kearney.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now keep those comments coming in to us until 7 o'clock this evening. We'll talk football, after 7 we'll talk hurling, and then from about 20 past we'll talk a bit of rugby. We'll go back to Liam and John. Thanks to Dan there for keeping us updated with, I suppose, all the positive. Just away from that beforehand, isn't it great to think that Kerry can beat Cork by 13 points plus in a ladies match at senior level? We've got to that level now where our expectation is through the roof.
Like we said, it's the shoes under the foot now. Like 8-10 years ago, we were looking at the great Cork teams, but this Kerry team have developed so much in the last couple of years, and they seem to be building towards something big. Like, we don't want to be blowing it up at the moment, but they seem to be doing it themselves, because the panel they're building, you know, the confidence, the players they have, you know, I just hope that it keeps going for them.
Absolutely. Good evening, Donald. Great to see Kerry going well yesterday in Clones. Killian Burke is going well after the first two games, took his goal well, and unlucky not to get another one. But the highlight of the weekend was meeting the three wise men, Timmy, Ambrose and Liam. You're one of the wise men now as well.
What was that, the fellow we changed the punter for?
I'm sure he didn't know who you were at all. And that's from John Creedon there in the top of room.
That's
in
right, John. Yeah, John was sitting below us, a great Kerry supporter. But the Kerry supporters, again, I'm just going to mention them, like, they were fantastic, the busloads that went up. Another fellow I have to mention, because he brought us three bottles and three bars up to the three of us. His birthday's tomorrow, Dennis Downey. I don't know, as he knows himself, as he calls himself Kerry's number one supporter. But no, they're a fantastic bunch. They travel the length and breadth of the country. Of course, they have a great weekend as well. But it's always great to see them and great to talk to them, and very knowledgeable people as well.
You heard that, John? Three bottles.
They're the guys that tell us. They're the guys that tell us what to say.
Fair play to Kerry supporters. It's a long haul up to Monaghan.
It is,
They continuously do it, and it's a great boost for the players as well.
Yeah.
When you see these guys, when you're coming off the bus and they're around, you know, it's a great boost when you're away from home.
And I saw it yesterday as well. Just before we finish up on that, the players when they came out, they spent a bit of time and in the car park with the Kerry supporters. You know, so if there's anyone out there that weren't at the game yesterday and they want to spend a bit of time, it's their away games, because the Kerry players, the Kerry management really appreciate the effort. And you know, they came out, they took photographs, they signed autographs before they got on the buses. And you know, it was a nice thing to see.
Absolutely. Hi Dáil, good win for Kerry, and good to see Killian Burke and Joe O'Connor doing well. But no need to get too carried away. It's only one game, and that's Charles. You never walk alone. And I suppose Charles, you probably mourning yesterday after the Arsenal game, 3-1. Tough defeat, tough loss. I think Ivan hasn't gone over it yet anyway. Donal, serious question. Do the panel know what's the story with Dan O'Donoghue and Donal O'Sullivan? No, you're looking at, we've got one of the three wise men here anyway. Two great players. I feel Donal and Barry Dan were brought on in last year's All-Ireland final 15 minutes ago. We'd have won that All-Ireland easily. And that's from Jamie in North Kerry. Dan O'Donoghue, great county championship.
He must be carrying an injury. We were just talking about we haven't. He must be kind of injured. He's still in there, but he is injured. But I do think Donal isn't in there for some reason.
Isn't in there. Donal was on the East Kerry panel last year.
He was on the East Kerry panel last year, And a couple, like your listener said, played a couple of good league games last year. Never featured in the championship, which was kind of unusual. But I suppose things didn't fall his way. But I've no doubt we could see Donal again in the years to come.
He's one of the great kickers in Kerry.
He was a great underage all the way up.
So maybe he's carrying an injury, maybe he's out of favour at the moment. But in fairness to Jack, the door's always open. Yeah. And fellas that have gone out have been brought back in. And that'll probably happen with the two lads again.
Donal, Sean Horshlin gave Kerry nothing yesterday. He let Monaghan pull and drag all day. That's Mike and Tralee around the corner. Please discuss.
He did. It was kind of both ways, and we discussed this at half time yesterday. But I thought he left the game flow. He tried to leave it flow. Now conditions at times didn't allow it, but he left a couple of advantage. Donal, what to call it, David's goal should have been a free over on the right hand side underneath the stand, but he left it flow and it went around the other side of the field, and next thing David got the goal. So
I think personally, and we slag refs long enough, I think he had a top job.
I thought he did very well. And he's the better of the referees in my opinion.
He left the game flow. I thought, you know, he kind of told players, man up, get on with it.
For both sides,
get the ball going, get it moving. And he did yellow card what needed to be yellow carded, and he kind of stopped that as well. Another thing that kind of impressed me as well was the penalty very early on in the game when Killian Burke went in and he kind of went down and the whole lot. He didn't panic, he didn't give a penalty. Everybody was thinking, was it a free, was it a penalty, what was happening? Went in, discussed with his umpires, made his decision, and I didn't see anybody complaining.
And it going by television, he got the decision right. which is the most important thing.
And that's what you want from a referee, to get the important decisions.
The big calls have to be got right, in fairness, and I thought he had a great game. But like, he showed fierce experience.
He did.
He went in, he spoke to the lads inside, he got his spot on.
Yeah, there was guys, you could see there was some guys looking, in both sides, looking for frees, and he was just telling them, get up and get on with it. For both teams, you know, compared to the week before with Joe McQuillan above, I thought Joe was kind of a bit off the mark for a lot of the calls. I thought Sean, and like I said, he's one of the better officials in my book. I thought he had a very good game.
From a referee's point of view, the ref that lets it go, Liam, I know it's not in the rule book, but when you leave it go on both sides and you make the calls on the big ones, but I think leaving it go, people like to see it, because you know, if there's a bad tackle, it adds to the game.
Don't we love hurling referees? They let everything go, let it go, move on, after you go, he says. Right, next one. Why was Jack in the stands yesterday, John Kennedy? There was a couple of shots of him in the stands, but I don't think he was actually in the stands.
He was there for the Derry game as well.
In fairness, I've seen him doing it before, and it's something that a lot of managers don't know. They're going up for a half.
You get a good view when you're higher.
Do you have much influence on a game when you're standing on a pitch side?
Your eye level with him, didn't like,
So you do have a better view?
No. You have a better view when you go up. You go up high.
But it's impossible to get, if you're trying to get something across to the cornerback at the other side or the corner forward, how do you get it across?
How do you get it across?
The runner's gone now. So, like, it's impossible, virtually impossible to do it. And I think that, you know, he was up there with Michal, with Dermot Murphy, and he was coming down in contact with Michal, and I think that's he has done it before, and I think he'll continue to do it, because, you know, you get a different view. and he was obviously speaking to the guys with the stats, looking at it last night. He had a word with those, so you're getting the picture in both sides.
What's a manager looking at up there? I mean, obviously he's not watching the ball just moving around. Is he watching corner backs? Is he watching the play?
Letting too much space, you know, small things like that. Our forward running, you know, you can, and it's like when we're up in the box, down, you can see it. It's so obvious, you know, to say that your corner forward is not running in the direction where he should be running, or half forward is going too deep and he should be a bit. So there's a lot of things you can see at a higher level than what you would see at ground level.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes when the forwards, when they draw the players away to create space on the other side, it's not too obvious when you're down at ground level.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you can see it when you're up above.
Yeah.
I don't know, should I read the next one out at all? Starts off with "Hi Tim." Actually, it was my third year here, was it? Anyway, "Hi Tim, don't apologize, but anyway, how bad? Could you ask the panel, what do you think of the appointment of Pat O'Shea of Dr. Crooks? It's a different team to when Pat was there, but now the older and more experienced players are near retiring." And that's from Michael. And I don't say he's a Legion fan or something. But it's, first of all, it's great to see inter-county manager with such much experience going back into the club. And obviously taking over Dr. Crooks is a big gig. And I'm sure Pat O'Shea didn't go back to Dr. Crooks just to train him and compete in Super League games.
Yeah, probably one of the best coaching managers in my book, you know, that I've come across down through the years. And without a doubt, if you look, and we've myself and John discussed it during the week, you know, if you look at the Crokes team at the moment on paper with the players, Kerry Miners, you know, all the way up to the 20s and seniors, like, they probably are one of the best clubs, teams on paper still. So I'd say Pat will make a job with these. And not only that, he's bringing in Connie Murphy and Niall Botty and all these guys, you know. It's like the All-Ireland winning management team kind of coming back together again, you know. And I know the old fellas are moving on, but there's young fellas, and I'm sure they'll, and look, Pat has been around the club, he hasn't disappeared the time he went involved. He was involved underage, he was involved with the junior team last year, you know, so he knows all these young fellas. So it'll only benefit Crooks to have like,
you would have to say, Liam, Pat is Dr. Crooks, really, isn't he?
He would be,
you know, he's one of the best thinkers of the game.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate enough to serve a year under him as a minor selector. He was outstanding. You know, he's
a coach-manager.
Coach-manager.
Yeah.
He's a great players man, but, you know, he surrounds himself with great people, and he's Dr. Crooks in his blood. And, you know, he's not going in there just to make up the numbers or serve a time. He's going in to win silverware. And, you know, they have the players.
And they have the players, yeah.
I think Andrew Kennelly's with him there as well. Donald, Dylan Casey, Graham Sullivan proving a real potent force on the counter-attack. Paul Murphy was outstanding. Still think we're in trouble in the wing-back areas. It seems to be something that's coming through. For the likes of Jack Liam going through the league, I mean, obviously he doesn't want to get the perfect six after round two. I mean, obviously there's an awful lot of more challenges before he gets his perfect six. But how many of his perfect six has he found, maybe?
Definitely. And like, Dylan Casey is really holding his hand up. Like, we're just, this is just an example of players who are on the fringe. You know, if you bide your time and you get your chance, you take it. And Dylan, like last year, was tipping around, getting a few games here and there, but he's like, really held the jersey
I
now.
I remember Dylan getting the chance to mark Aidan O'Shea
last year,
game, and didn't do well. I mean, O'Shea had more. But Dylan has improved so much this year that you would feel that if he got the chance with him again, it would be different.
Yeah, experience. To know, because he is, you know, you get hurt once, but you will learn from it. But Graham O'Sullivan, another guy who's really, you know, in the last couple of years, not only this year, has been outstanding. You know, half back line, I wouldn't worry a whole pile about it, because we have the personnel, but the half hours that we're meeting at the moment, there are a lot of speed teams now, like Monaghan, these guys have speedsters there. But Gavin White, you know, Tom Sullivan, whether it'll be Paul Murphy, whether it'll be Brino Bredeoch, you know, these guys, you know, we will be able to fill in positions. I wouldn't panic too much for that.
If you add in Tig Marley and Brino Begley, with the six of us yesterday, your six will come from
your
that
six,
eight.
Exactly.
I think.
Yeah.
Next comment in, Killian Burke, plays with the youthful abandonment of a young player, but how long more will he be left to do this? He misplaced a few telling passes yesterday, which could be crucial come championship, but he has given us massive possibilities. I suppose that in a sense is a young lad getting on the team, playing you, away and playing wild.
You got to let Killian do what Killian does. Yeah. Killian is a guy that will put it on his toe. I love a Killian because he'll take his men on. He'll create space. He'll run at teams, and it proved it yesterday. He handled a world of ball. He worked very hard. He got his goal chance. Maybe another goal chance he could have, but he's one of these attacking forwards.
I'm presuming the comment means that the commenter agrees that he's fantastic, but he's saying that with all that abandonment, will he be allowed to continue that?
I think he will.
And I think when you put David and Pardy into that, then it's far easier to play.
Because they're going to draw so much attention.
They're going to draw so much attention, and he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
I think he improved from the Derry game, and that goal and the way he did a lot of simple things. Of course, he gave a few missed passes. We all did that in our day. But look, a lot of positives. Oh. And he gives another option.
He does. And what he was doing yesterday as well, he was running into scoring positions yesterday where he wasn't doing that in the game against Derry. But like that again, that's all experience. And
congratulations to the Kerry seniors and management on a good win yesterday. Good to see our namesake Amy Harrington on the panel and get player of the match today. Amy, daughter of former 2-6 great and country athlete Maureen Harrington, and that's from Dermot and Margaret Ann, who keep an eye on everything down there, and 2-6 for us. And Margaret in Killarney has a massive stat for us. What's the stat? These two boys have no idea.
Surprises.
That's Margaret. Margaret, going to surprise you. Hi, Donal. Kerry put up the same score, the very same score against Monaghan for the last 3 years in the National League.
Yes.
Amazing.
Good stat, It's been a happy hunting ground for us in Monaghan as well.
Last year you said we were awful in the league and we put up as much scoring against Monaghan this year.
We were awful in the league.
Just to show you, the performances were much better this year. Quickly, Mayo coming to town, never easy, on the back of the Dublin win. Didn't look outstanding though, did it?
They didn't. But the Mayo will be the big physical team that'll come down and try to bully us around Ossensack Park. And it'll be another great game for us to see where we are.
Yeah,
and I think that's what we'll be looking at, and I think we owe him now from the cold night we spent above Mayo last year and the hiding.
It was a horrible night, wasn't
that
it?
That was a horrible night up there. Yeah.
And that was the night that David Clifford came on that night as well at half time.
That's right. Yeah,
he didn't turn around as easily. Quick word on Dublin and Cork, John, both struggling.
Yeah, Cork disappointing against Louth the weekend game.
That's their chance to get into Division 1 gone, is it?
Yeah, I think so. And now you're looking at avoiding the Tailteann Cup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're...
That pressure's on all of a sudden.
Pressure's on.
Yeah.
You know, they have Cavan next, I think, and that's a huge game for them. Dublin, wouldn't worry too much about Dublin. I think, you know, they're not too far off.
They won Sam Maguire from Division 2 last year. So.
Exactly, yeah. And they won't be worried about that. And there's no more retirements
coming.
Well,
Dublin worry, though, about the manner of their losses. I mean, they've gone into their last two games into injury time level. They lost both games. That's not the Dublin of all. They snatched games.
They're making silly mistakes, aren't they? And that's game practice, really, fitness.
And they're missing huge leaders, to be fair. You know, they took off McCaffrey the last night. You know, if Trust Championship, they wouldn't be taking off Jack McCaffrey, you know, Brian Finton. They're making basic mistakes, but they're still there or thereabouts. And like Kerry last year, it's catch up, getting the fitness right.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, thanks for all the comments this evening. After the break, we'll be talking hurling. 066-712-3666 or text us on 083-300-3300. Of course, there's no football next week. Of course, we have a week off. And all Tralee Corneverry, 30 seconds.
Be a great game.
Massive
for Tralee. You know, for years we've been, Killarney have been, you know, the main team in this competition, but it's great that Tralee is starting to rise from the ashes now. There'll be a great atmosphere at it. Local derby. I can't wait for it.
It's a big one for Mount Hawk, isn't it?
Big one for Mount Hawk.
Tralee CBS have the culture of winning.
This is their first bite at the cherry, really, and a very good team by them. You know, so it's going to be a ding dong affair. I know Mount Hawk will probably go in as favourites, but local derby, anything can happen in a once-off game.
So will we have Mount Hawk or Tralee CBS sitting there next week?
Well, I suppose the bookies will say Mount Hawk, but don't be surprised if CBS could be sitting there. In other words, that's a politician answer.
We'll find out next week. We go to break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, the Kerry Hurlers got their Alliance Hurling Division 2A campaign off to a somewhat disappointing start, I suppose, yesterday when they were defeated by Carlow in a game which they were probably second best for most of it, to be fair. Probably not all that shocking either, considering that where both teams are at the moment, with Kerry possibly rebuilding and so many new faces on the team, while Carlow, to their credit, I suppose, they're preparing for life in the Liam McCarthy Championship. Richard O'Foran and James McCarthy joining us on the line. Richard, would that be too simplistic a sum up to say that both teams are in two different positions at the moment, and that's why Carlow are a good bit ahead yesterday anyway?
No, I think you'd be totally correct. I think Pat Bennett said after the Tipperary game, we have 16 new players in, and you know, average age 20. And I suppose even if Jack O'Connor got 16 new players in, he'd have to give them time as well. Do you know what I mean? And but of course, that was compounded, I suppose, yesterday by the loss, I think, of a very exciting player, Luke Crowley, but especially Shane Conway. The loss of Shane was massive. But yes, Carlow are ahead of us. You know, they're Liam McCarthy side, as you say. I know they play Kilkenny and Wexford previous to this. But they are ahead of us. And, you know, yesterday our lads tried valiantly, but Carlow are in a different place. They're Liam McCarthy side. They have moved on while we are rebuilding. And I don't think anybody would argue with that, because, you know, when you have 16 players coming in, there is going to be a rebuilding process, and you don't expect magic overnight.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. James McCarthy, you never believed in magic anyway. when you face into a campaign like that and you look at the roster of games that are coming down thing, and the first game is Carlow, you're going to say, God, we need Carlow. You feel that's a game that you'd wish for as game four, maybe game five or game three, not game one. So, I mean, the odds were stacked against Kerry yesterday anyway.
It's true, Joel. It's Carlow. It's a strange one. Carlow, because if you look at Carlow last year, they started so slowly, ended up winning Joe McDonagh, yes. But you saw early on in the league how quiet and how poor they were. Next thing, it was like a switch they flicked. They turned it on straight away. They've been a powerhouse ever since. But there's, you know, Kerry, as far as they are rebuilding, yes. But you look at the starting 15, there's a lot of fellas on there a long time. Okay, it was a poor effort at home. It really was. We were well open at the back in the first half. We were wide open. And Carlow did what they want. So I know they had the breeze. Maybe if we start with the breeze, if you are going to be getting experience a bit raw, maybe start with the breeze, start as strong as you can, get something to hold on to for the second half. But we were really up against it. And like Richard said, like Carlow are a nice step ahead of us now. And the danger with this is you see the restructure of the league coming down the line, Donald, and you don't know where we're going to be. You've got to be very careful in our league system here this year, because if we finish in the bottom half, maybe we could be Division 3. The way things are laying out, if they're saying 7 in Division 1, 7 in Division 2 and the rest in Division 3, we want to be very careful.
You need to be pushing towards two anyway. Come here, James. To be fair, the loss of Shane Conway going into a game, I mean, obviously you want all your big stars. I mean, he's playing midfield now at the moment. He's, I suppose, the major free taker. He looks after all that side of the game as well. I mean, when you were in a dressing room and maybe your top player, one or two of your top players were taken before the game starts, well, what does the manager say to players? I mean, do the players kind of half know maybe an hour in advance? Do they know a couple of days in advance? Is it not a big shock at all? Have they put the contingencies in for it? But to be robbed of a player so close to the game starting, I mean, that must throw all the plans out the window.
It does. Basically, they would have had a lot of the games and centred around Shane. They would have. I don't. But you can imagine he would have been injured during the week. This didn't happen overnight. He's probably carrying a knock, and they were hoping probably that he was in, maybe fit enough to start, but he's a huge loss. And looking at it, we're a bit light up front. We were not scoring freely. Like you see, Carlow's like, you have Marty Campbell, the 1-9, and young Nolan, the 1-6. That's from their half hour. Their half hour line got 2-16 yesterday. That's fair tipping. Mm-hmm. That's fair tipping. Their inside line was very quiet, but their half hour line really killed us. And like, we're not scoring as freely as that at all. And maybe, I know we seem to be piling up at the back. That's grand if you're keeping the opposition score down, but when the opposition is scoring freely, then you've got to go away from that system totally, because Doherty was trying to sweep up a lot of areas around there yesterday, but Christ, there was scores going in, still scores going in, like, you're saying, Christ, what are we doing here? Like, we're not getting enough scores up front, or we're not keeping them out. to kind of a cotton and no man's land, really.
Mm-hmm. That said, Rich Tarrant, 19 points and probably another maybe 7 or 8 scores probably left behind as well through freeze and kind of misplaced passes and the whole lot. But the performance of Niall Mulcahy are in the second half, I mean, he's a name now that people will say we don't know who he is or we haven't heard of him too often, but he had a decent second half.
Yeah, I think I was impressed, you know, when the ball was going into the corner. I mean, I wouldn't believe in, we don't have a big man inside, so I wouldn't believe in the high ball going in. But when balls were going into the corner, into Mossy and especially into Daniel Goggin, I thought that they were great to get on the ball. And I think about three shots, I think, just whistled over the crossbar as well. You know, so when they get into position, I think that they're very, very good players. And, you know, Daniel Goggin is an outstanding corner forward. So that's what I would like to see. I would like to see more balls going in, rather than high balls going in. Also the corner, I think we you know, the lads aren't the biggest, so I think that that's the best ball to go in. But that said, you know, yesterday, Cala were by far the better side. And as James said, we're building and it will take time. But Cala are ahead of us. And, the visit to Down, the trip to Down now, will be of vital importance, because they put up a good show yesterday against Laois. I was surprised at how well they did yesterday. So a vital game now next week.
Yeah. James, Down are similar to ourselves. I mean, they're trying to make that push on through as well. I mean, they've probably been as good as us in the last recent number of years. Every now and again, maybe they kind of have a small bit of a blowout, maybe don't get the results that they deserve or whatever. But heading to Down, they will see us certainly as vulnerable, and the fact that it's above and down, they will target that as a win, surely.
Oh, they'll be looking at this, yeah. They've seen our results and they've seen their own performance, and like, that's what Kerry should. This week should be concentrating on Park and last weekend. Bang, get it totally out of the system. Go up and really go at Down, because Down will be on a little bit of a high after their performance, like Rich Dyer said against Laois. But you catch them early, I'm telling you, put them in the back foot. Ballycran now is very hard to play. Christ, we've been numerous times. It's a tough spot. And the weekend, the weather's not looking too great following coming weekend. Like, so it's a nice trip up north for the boys now, and I hope they get a result up there, because we need something up there to get us back on track, get back on the rails again straight away. Because with a young team, young lads coming in like that, their confidence can be dented a little bit. If you've got two bad losses in a row, their confidence will be, you know, on the floor, really. So you're hoping the boys will bounce back, and I hope they will now. But I don't have been close to us last couple of years in Joe McDonnell, even in the league. It's never been much between us, and it's always been very tight. Even when they came out of Tralee, they gave us trouble. So it's going to be really tough up there. But we still have the best now, and hopefully we get something out of it.
Mm-hmm. Rich Dard, you're obviously the more positive person of this pairing anyway. I mean, pick a few positives. Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, look, we can write a page on, you know, what didn't go right, but what did go right? I mean, there certainly were some positives.
Yeah, I'd point again to Daniel Goggin, I think, inside in the corner. I think he's a man that can cause trouble. I think, but you have to get the right ball into him, and he's a great man to strike from the wing as well. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, Fionnuala battles hard, but you know, when you talk about being positive, mm-hmm. you know, we were going into the game as underdogs, and it was always going to be difficult, because what you have is a very, very young and inexperienced side. So these lads will develop, but you know, it will take time, and I don't think that we're expecting them to work miracles this year and win Division 2A and the Joe McDonnell. It'll take time, and we have to be patient, and it's the same, you know, with any team that is rebuilding and has, as I said, that's what Pat Bennett said, 16 new players in. You know, you don't expect miracles from them overnight.
Mm-hmm. Looking over the ditch at Division 1, some of our old friends, Offaly, Westmead, Antrim, they all got a trimming yesterday.
They did, absolutely. So, you know, Westmead as well, got a fair hammer against Galway. So that's the gap that's there at the moment. And you know what I mean? I think we just have to concentrate now on our rebuilding exercise. But certainly, it was disappointing, I suppose, from you know, looking at our fellow, those travellers as such, because we would have been, you know, playing against them quite a lot, and it was disappointing to see the gulf that was there at the weekend. You know, but as I say, we have to worry about our own business.
Mm-hmm. James, I mean, you were often in a dressing room where the first round of the league or the first round of the championship didn't work out. You either got a hiding. What do players have to do? I mean, obviously, you said that, you know, they have to kind of park it now and get on with the next game. Is that easier said than done?
I don't think so. When you're young, you should be fearless. The boys should be fearless. They've had no baggage. These lads have no baggage lost them. I met some of the lads today, and like, they said, look, they have the work put in. Don't just, like they say, throw the baby out with the bat water at the minute. No, it's all the work is done. Yesterday was a bad day. Right? So get over that, move on, rely on yourselves, trust yourselves on what you've done and what you've kind of togetherness you've built up in the last, even early on in the games they played against Tipperary and Waterford and those. Build on that again. And as Rustar said, Mossy and Dangdog inside will be a big asset. Eric Lean coming back in the full back, I think, will be huge as well. I think we'll be more solid. I bought a Fernando 4 points of centre back yesterday. I'd really move him on again like this. We need that man really powering into the game. I think he'll be huge up and down. And Michael Lean is nice. Big games come from these lads, and hopefully they'll really push us over the line now in Ballycran at the weekend. Hopefully they've gone up Friday night, so they're playing Saturday. So it's kind of an early start for them, the guys. It's a tough weekend for them now, and hopefully they get something out of it.
Yeah, and of course, the names that you're mentioning, I mean, they're players that have been in and around the squad for a good many years as well. I mean, some of them go back to Fintan's time as well. So they have the experience, and they will be showing the leadership for a lot of the newer fellas coming in.
Oh, guaranteed. And you know, they're without even, like, we're looking at a chronic captain. Tomás wasn't there now. Yeah, started yesterday, like, but it'd be nice to see, really, if he's on this weekend now. Chronic getting their time in the sun, as they say. And like all these lads, Fernand doesn't need a captaincy. Michael Lean doesn't need a captaincy. They're leaders anyway. They're fellas that all the young lads in the squad look up to, and look at Fernand, like what he's done last year, what a year he had last year. Michael Lean's been super. I think Michael Lean's got a very understated player altogether. And you know, I see fellas like Brandon Barrett too and Gavin Dooley. They will get better as they go along. These are good players. There's good hurlers there. And Richard said, like, we've good hurlers. Just get the formula right. Maybe you get the right person on the team. We might just click. We might just fall into a good team, or maybe the right person by accident and get a win out of it and get moving. But I hope we do, because I'd like to see us playing in Division 2 next year. Would maybe like to Leash, Westmead, Antrim, all those guys. I think it's back to be really, really competitive. And maybe even there could be Wexford and Offaly thrown there too. It could be a really good division next year. So hopefully build this year and look forward to next year, kind of the way it is, like in Richard said.
My God, James McCarthy being very positive. Come here, we'll let the final word with you, Richard. The down trip, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one, but I suppose we're going up there as well last year, I think. And, you know, people were saying that, you know, that they were missing a few players that day. But look, it is what it is. We have to go up there and we have to get the win, and that's it. But I think that the lads, you know, their backs are to the wall. And as James said, they can park last weekend. They're a good bunch of lads. They've worked hard. The training they've put in has been massive. And I'm confident they'll go up there and get a result and get back on track.
There you go, James McCarthy and Richard O'Foran, giving us a view into the game for the Kerry Hurlers against St. Guys, we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully we'll be equally as positive and going forward. For now, we'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Killarney women are the Munster Under 18 League champions. I always leave that 0.5 out. I'm not too sure how they mentioned at a half age, is having defeated Ennis, of course. And it's a first for the club, is it?
It's a first for the club
at this level.
For under 18 and a half, yeah, it's a first. First under 18 and a half trophy for the girls. And I'd say I don't think that any of the boys' teams have ever won a kind of a provincial title at that age group anyway. Maybe I'm wrong, but
that's putting pressure on you straight away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. It's putting pressure on them as opposed to the girls, I think, because they got the result last Saturday.
Good stuff. That's the voice, of course, of Dermot O'Malley, he's here every week. But well, we've got three new ones for you this week. Emer O'Keefe, you're very welcome.
Hiya.
And she's a double D and a double F. Very important, yeah. Lillian Morris with a double R.
Thank you.
And Mary Ellen, we've given you back your proper name.
Yes.
Donnell.
Yes.
With a double L.
Double L, yeah.
God, you've all something in common. Good stuff. Come here. We were sitting here last week, and the final was the following week. And my God, it's like, did I lose a week or what? But all of a sudden, the game. Well, we won't go into the whole drama about it. Most important thing was you played your final, you got there, and you won. Heading into the final, Emer, I mean, you knew Innes from before. You're obviously playing them all the way through, I suppose, the different age groups, the whole lot. Was this a game you thought you could win? Was this a game that you're surprised you win? This a game you deserved you win? This a game that you should be winning?
Well, 10 of our starting squad the last day had played Innes before at under 16s level. We were part of the five that didn't. So we had kind of a fair idea of how they'd be, and we knew they'd be a tough competition. But I think with all the work we've put in through the months and, like, even coming up, like, we were confident that we'd put up a good fight to them.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? I mean, obviously we were talking last week about the community of rugby players in the female women's world, which is kind of a small enough world that, that you all kind of know each other and things. But describe how important this cup is in that world. This is the Munster one. I mean, this is... Sell it up, sell it, Emer.
Like, I think it's probably the best thing that could happen at this point in, like, anyone's rugby journey. Like, it's the best team in the province. Like,
and that's what it is. It's the best team in the whole province of Munster.
And it just, like, creates a dream for those younger girls. Like, our club now has an under-12s team for the first time. And it's great to see those girls come all the way up then and be able to dream about getting this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lily, I suppose the pathway is important because obviously some gang of people have to go first and go through that door and maybe knock the door open and get onto the next door and open that door as well. But by opening that door, you're letting your 14s and 12s through as well. And that's the most important part of this journey as well.
Yeah. It's lovely to see the younger girls coming up. Like, we played the under-16s on Friday evening, was it, before the
Wednesday.
Game? Wednesday evening, even. And just as to get a bit of practice in before the final. And, like, the standard of rugby they were playing was absolutely phenomenal. So it's so good to see the progress they're making and the numbers as well, the turnout that they have to training at a 16s, at a 14s level, and, like you were saying, at an under-12s level. And then even the minis. I mean, we got a send-off from the minis on Saturday morning. And
what's that like?
50% of them were girls. Like, it was lovely. They're so cute. They're so cute. It was lovely. I felt famous for a second going off. Like, but, yeah, it's lovely to see them. And so giddy, hyper.
And does that give you... Then we say you're in the dressing room and you're getting ready for the game, and all of a sudden, before it was just your parents or your next door neighbour was delighted for you, but now there's a club behind you, there's a community behind you, there's the little minis with their really happy smiley faces that you told you're going to bring home a cup. Is that more pressure or is that nice pressure?
I think it's nice. It's nice to know that there's people behind you and backing you. You know, like, that anyone in the club has your corner, and we got so much support going into the weekend. Like, everyone was looking out for us, and people from, you know, that weren't necessarily part of the under 18 setup were coming up to watch and to support, and girls that had previously played for the under 18s came to watch. So it's lovely. Yeah, it was really nice to see.
Mary Ellen, also part of the journey. Tell us about the journey. I mean, obviously you played the games to qualify, but let's go back to the Clonakilty game for a second, because, I mean, that was a titanic struggle before you ever got onto this. How important was that game?
Oh, it was incredibly important. Like, they beat us back in the league, and obviously beating them in the semi-final, just, it was a dream. Like, getting to the final, everything. Oh, it was just amazing to win that game. The weather is so bad, and just trying to...
Describe the weather first. I mean, so bad. I mean, when I read out the weather forecast, so bad means it's going to rain or something. But, I mean, so bad was really bad, wasn't it?
Oh, it was really bad. There was wind, rain, sleet, I'd say, sometimes, everything.
What's it like playing in those conditions?
It's tough, but...
Does it add to the whole rugby game as such? I mean, it's tough. You can barely feel your fingers, I suppose. They're so cold, and you're waiting for a pass, maybe, that you're afraid that you're going to drop because you're probably frozen. Or does it become a forwards game? Does it become a game where you just kind of keep the ball and it's only going a yard up and a yard back and the whole lot? Does it become a real war of attrition, does it?
Small bit, yeah, it does. Like, I couldn't feel my hands for a majority of the game, so...
That's wingers for you.
Yeah.
Oh, she wingers, she. I played rugby for Clarkin years ago, and I played in the wing as well, and John Healy told me I'd catch my ditto call before I get a pass.
I'd say that was me.
That's you as well, yeah. Yeah. The forwards who hold the ball a lot. Are you forwards?
Yeah.
Do you ever pass the ball to the backs?
Do we trust them enough?
Or comes down, Dermot. Yeah, do we trust them enough? We have good backs as well, have you?
A very good backline. And I think the most satisfying thing about Saturday was it was a real stop-start kind of a game. But look, 25 minutes in, all the scoring was done, but we scored with a score that was kind of very much intertwined between the forwards and the backs, and it went out wide then, and Mary Ellen was at the end of it and finished off beautifully. But it was a real good team try, and it was a fitting try to win a game. And it was, look, at that stage we thought there was going to be a lot more scores, but there wasn't, and it just shows you, like, a cup final like that, you know, it's about getting the points on the board, and that's what we did. And it was great. And it was just, look, that was, look, ideal scenario. We would love to have scored some more tries and played running rugby. But look, Ennis were a very good, strong team. Defensively, both sides were very, very good. And there's very little between the two sides. Like, 3 points was all it was at the end of the day. And, you know, look, the girls, to me, did very much deserve the win. And that's credit to them. And a credit at the end, I think, was very fitting is in terms of the fitness and what they put into it over the last couple of months. They were the team that were attacking in the last 15-20 minutes, and Ennis were hanging on, whereas usually being 3 points up, you would have thought that Ennis would be the attacking team. But that was a testament to the extra work that the girls put in. Myself and Josh asked for that extra work, and the girls turned up in loads. We did so much good work. We went into the gym and we did spinning and boxing and all sorts of fun stuff that they really enjoyed, and it was really good for their fitness, and it stood to them last Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Eimear, how important is dozing, I'd say, maybe side attractions for the whole game of rugby? Because you're trying to build a bond in a team, and I suppose even though numbers are big, I mean, numbers are still kind of tidy or handy, or you got your 15, you might have about 8 or 10 extra on the panel or whatever it is. So it needs to be kind of tight. It needs to have a good bond, or you know, is there a good sense of humour inside the dressing room? Do people have each other's backs? All kind of very important things.
Yeah, like those nights where maybe we're not doing like the hardest rugby session ever, but it's great for like building the chemistry with the team. Like at the end of the day, like, these girls have my back no matter where I am on the pitch or off it, and I'd have the same for them. Like, we're like a family there. Like, every moment that we're on that pitch, we have each other's backs. We're looking out for each other. Like, we're supporting each other through it all. If someone misses a training, there's always someone else texting them, are you okay, missed you tonight, something like that. And I think the nights where we do something more fun, like the spinning or the boxing, it's great to just have a laugh and be able to like almost relax while doing something that is productive.
You may have found the spinning, Lee.
No. that was Dierma's idea. Now, before we get into the spinning, like, that's not a forwards kind of scene. No, it was good crap. We did boxing as well. That was more.
That was more Mary Ellen.
Yeah.
Better spinner.
Oh yeah. How much better I'd be, but.
Absolutely, but it's all part and process of it. Lily, I mean, it. You're on a lot of different journeys. We were talking about you last week. I know what you were saying, nice things or bad things about you, but you're so busy playing rugby with all sorts. And obviously, congratulations with the Munster and the Irish journey and the whole lot. But what does it mean to you that journey which you're on and could get to loads of different places and the whole lot? How important is it if we had started here?
I suppose I couldn't have done it without Killarney, really. Like, that they had the structure that I could just kind of walk in and play the kind of game I wanted to play, and that they gave me the leg up to be seen from a provincial and a national level. I mean, I'm not the only one. There's plenty of other girls around me with the same kind of standards. But yeah, no, couldn't have done it without Killarney, really. Like, I'm so glad I made the move. I mean, like, rugby now wasn't, I never dreamed that I'd be playing rugby now. It was ballet and tap dancing for quite a long time before I went into rugby. So
that was one you wasted, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, indeed. You wouldn't tell by looking at me that it was ballet now, but turned into a prop fairly quickly.
Oh my God, yeah. Fair play. Come here, we have to take a break because we'll talk to you again after the break. But before we go, Mary Ellen, you live in Glencare.
I do, yeah.
How does somebody from Glencare find their way to Killarney?
Oh, well,
don't say by road or back through the mountain or something.
No, well, Lily got me into the school's rugby team last year, and then Dermot came to our game and he dragged me down to Killarney to try out there. So
he was short wingers.
Well, they must have been short something to grab someone from Glencare anyway.
Oh my God, don't say anything about Glencare, we've loads of listeners up there. We'll take a quick commercial break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. I'm in the company of the victorious Killarney rugby women, who are the champions of Munster. Still sounds great, doesn't it? And you've got a fine big cup as well. Normally when people win the Munster thing, it's kind of like, really, is that a huge cup? But it's a fairly decent one. Who won it last year, Lily?
Ennis. Oh. Ennis.
So the two in a row wasn't happening?
No, we cut them off.
Absolutely. What are the names around it, actually, when you had it?
Carrick and Shore, Bantry, Listowel, Tralee, Carrick and Shore again, Ennis again, and then Ballinacillilu.
And once Dermot finally runs across to somewhere in Killarney to inscribe it, Killarney will be on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Dermot, this journey, yourself and Josh have been on it for quite a while. I remember maybe from 14s onwards, and it's kind of that group of players with a lot of new faces coming in, coming out. And that's important too, to refresh the group, to keep it going. But we were talking about opening the door for the minis and the whole lot. I mean, that kind of rotation system comes along, because it would be an awful shame to see Killarney on that just once, especially when you're talking about the under 16 talent coming through. So there is the potential to have this for another year, and maybe another year, and the whole lot. Now obviously that's probably a pile of work, is this? I mean, God almighty, more spinning classes and the whole lot. They'll all be gone. But really that should be the plan, or that should be the dream, shouldn't it?
No, absolutely. Look, it's about, especially with girls rugby, it's about spreading it and getting more girls involved and getting more people playing and participation. People like Liam Murphy, Fiona Landers and Gabbett, they've done a huge amount of work for girls rugby within the club, and it's, as the lad said earlier on, seeing that bunch of under 12 girls coming up and getting them inspired by the girls beside me here, and that can only have a good positive effect. But look, it takes so many people to put in so much work to keep that show on the road, you know, and that's very, very important. But and then seeing people kind of going to higher honours, and you know, why can't it be someone from Listowel or Iverra or Killarney or Glencar or wherever, that can't be that the next person? And that, look, hopefully, and it's a great game, it gives so much, and it complements so much other sports that they play as well, and it's different seasons as well, so it's a win-win for the girls and win-win for all the other sports that they play as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course that is the important part as well, that, I mean, you do play other sports. I mean, you kind of rotate through rugby. Where was your pathway into rugby, Eimear?
I started rugby with the school team.
Would you have played another sport as well before that?
I played Gaelic. I kind of started with the school because a friend of mine wanted someone to tag along with her.
Nice.
And for one reason or another, she ended up not continuing doing it.
And left you there.
It left me all alone. How dare she? But I stuck with it, and we only had like enough numbers for sevens rather than 15s.
And when you say school now, you better give them their credit.
St. Bridget's Killarney. Oh,
the Prez.
The Prez. Yeah.
Basketballers.
Yeah. So for rugby to come out of a school like that, we got to Munster semi-finals with that as well, at a blitz in Cork.
And what does the family think? I mean, you come home, you're saying, yeah, rugby's my thing, I'm playing it. Do you get the kind of the usual thing from, I don't know, the uncle or aunt saying, God, you break your nose and you get hurt and all that? Must you cross that path, or do you just go roll up the sleeves and this is what I'm doing?
Well, I don't think I had much opposition to it because I've always done what I wanted. So they're kind of used to me going off and doing crazy stuff. So when I brought up rugby, they were like, oh, that's lovely.
Got rules.
Yeah. My mother was a bit scared of all the injuries that could possibly come with it at first, but she's eased up now, so
she got over. And of course Lily isn't sporting an injury at all, is she?
I say nothing.
You won't give the opposition
there until I get a word from a doctor now that it's something, so you don't see anything at the moment.
But it's part of the game, isn't it, Lily?
It is.
You go through it, you train hard, you fall over, get knocked over, whatever. There's the possibility of an injury, but obviously, I mean, rugby has got so much that injury prevention is part of it now as well. I mean, you tackle it correctly, and the rules are coming in again and again and rewashed over to protect the game and protect the players.
Yeah, the tackle height, the new law there, that's come in. We've seen a lot of that this season, a few penalties now for high tackles, from girls getting used to it. But
does it take a bit of getting used to?
It shouldn't. I mean, I think the tackles should be that low anyway before the law ever came in, but it does, yeah. But I think it helps the game flow a bit freer, it speeds it up a bit. There's more opportunity for offloading.
It's a better game to play as a player,
it's
is
a much
it?
Quicker game, and it's much, you know, running rugby, as you would call it, that we're trying to play, and it suits us. The tackle height does suit us. Yeah, I think I'm glad it's there, to be honest.
Mary Ellen, you never tackled, were you, out and doing?
Oh, never. Oh. Not at all. I'd get a good few tackles, all right, though. Yeah.
Are you good for making tackles?
She is.
Yeah,
don't be modest.
Good stuff. The game itself, Mary Ellen, I mean, we're talking about the team bond and the whole lot. It's a different sport to other sports, and you mentioned football, and people play hurling and people play all sorts of things. It's the kind of game where the whole team are dependent on every single player?
Oh, definitely. Like, you need the teammates behind you. If you get tackled and they're not there to support you, like, that's your ball lost straight away. So it's a team sport in every direction.
And is that conscience on you as a player? I mean, some people I would imagine go and miss tackles there, it's grand, Lily get him around the corner or somebody else to get him. But I mean, is that part of the squad ethic that it's my responsibility to do it first, and if I can't get it and my colleague misses, I'm going to work harder to get that done for them?
Oh, definitely, yeah. You'd want, if you miss a tackle, your like teammate gets it, you'd be helping them for the next tackle, so you'd be there ready for it.
Mm-hmm. How many of you are on the team for next year?
Just me.
You scored a winning try again next year, will you?
See, yeah.
We mentioned the under-16s that nearly beat you in a training match. There's a lot of good talent coming through.
There is, yeah, and it seems to be improving the whole time as well, which is great. And TJ Brosnan has done a huge amount of work with those, and he's kind of keeping two underage teams, under-14s and under-16s, on the go, which is incredible testament to his hard work. And it's only as good as the volunteers that put in the work. And you know, there's so many people. Even I was just thinking there when Emer mentioned there what the reason she probably came out was from Jenna Moynihan at the time, from the school, and she would have come up to me and said, "I've a new player for." You know, so, and it's exciting to have that spotter, and then they want to come up and play with the club, and that's what it takes. You know, it takes so many people to
and
build it.
And it is a sport that you can arrive at 14 or 16 or 21 or 101 or whatever you want to call it, that, you know, once you arrive, you can fit in, you can find a place once you want to put the commitment into it.
Yeah, like, I think I always look back at someone like John Hayes. John Hayes started playing rugby in Shannon at under 20s level, and he went on to play over 100 times for Ireland, you know, so it's never too late. And you know, there's a lot of talk about concussion and these things, but as long as you learn the technique, and especially the tackle technique from the proper learn it properly from day one, then you know there's no reason why, you know, you can avoid those serious injuries, you know, and that can happen in any sport. But look, it's never too late, it really isn't. And look, I think it's like anything, these girls have made a bond of friendship, and that genuinely that can, you know, walk down the street in Killarney in 20 or 30 years time, and a little smile of an acknowledgement that they were once the best team in Munster under 18s. And I think that's very important. It
once
really
you inscribe the cup,
absolutely, that'll be done.
That'll be the most important fire you'll spend. Come here, Lily, final question, we'll wrap it up. Co-captain of the team, obviously, did she give a good speech, did she, or did she make any speech?
Oh. She
always talking,
speech.
Is she?
Yeah.
Out of 10, Emer?
The one on match day was a 10, to be fair.
Before the game started?
Yep.
She did a bit of quoting of Peter O'Mahony.
Yeah.
My God, oh my God.
Fired us up anyways.
Future Munster captain, maybe, is she?
Oh, I'd say so, yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, I get a bit too into it, don't I?
Final word for your colleagues and teammates, because, I mean, obviously the journey, the three of you didn't travel it on your own. I mean, obviously the whole lot, and you have the two lads with you as well. But, I mean, looking back on that achievement, how special is that?
Oh, so special. So I'm so, so proud of every single one of the girls. Like, every single one of our teammates now helped us to win that. We couldn't have done it on our own. You know, and to the coaches as well, we couldn't have done it without Josh, Dermot, Liam, Elaine, our manager. Like, we needed every single person backing us to get to this place now, and I'm so proud and I'm so delighted for us as well. I think we really did deserve it.
She's not a bad speaker, is she?
Not at all.
Yeah? And she from Cremon.
No excuse.
What school were you from?
I'm in the intermediate school now, yeah, Clorglan.
Right. The Prez intermediate and
intermediate.
LOISK.
He's really poaching, isn't he?
Not at all.
Well, listen, girls, congratulations. I did say if you win it, bring you back in next week. That was next week, the following week, but sure, you know, a week early is good too. Congratulations, you're a great story, great ambassadors. And I have to say as well, the three last week and the three this week, fantastic speakers, because normally we get people in and they're nearly too embarrassed to admit that they won something, or they're too shy, but I think it's very important that you do speak out as well, because I mean, it's important for the sport first of all, but it's also important because obviously we're reflecting an awful lot more sport on women's sports as well, which is the way it should be. And as you said already, sure, Dermot put the boot into straight away. I mean, like, the women have won it, the men haven't won it as well. No pressure there at all. You know, what kind of reception you'll get when you go home now? But I mean, it is great. And look, it's great to have another Kerry name on it, because Listowel and Tralee are on it already. And sure, now we have three kind of Kerry names. And sure, who knows, maybe in years to come, we'll have another one or two on it as well. But listen, congratulations and thanks for all you've done. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk, and of course, you remember last week we had all chats about the World Rally Championships coming to Kerry, and we said, you know, wouldn't it be great to kind of bring some guy in that knew a little bit more than Ivan maybe about it, and we'd have a chat for the next couple of weeks, because what we're really trying to do is we're trying to get, I suppose, people excited, Sean Moriarty, about the fact that this unbelievable rally championship and world events, world sporting event, remember last week we were talking about the amount of people that was going to come and the huge positive effects that's going to have on such an event and an area. A lot of people will know what it's all about, but for the untrained eye, we decided we will train a few eyes. And one thing about the sport, I mean, I'm looking at the sport, and to me it's just cars going up and down and around corners and the whole lot, but obviously there's far more happening to that, to the untrained eye. Speak to us about the actual, how the race starts, and it's the timing from A to B to C, and it's basically a timed competition, isn't it?
It's a timed competition, but funny enough, it's most people would think it as a speed sport, but it's actually a time and distance sport. And if you picture that the main service park of the rally, whether it comes in 25, 26 or 27, we don't know yet. We're waiting for government funding, we're waiting for the municipal Ireland announcements, but just imagine it comes in 2025. The MTU north of Tralee here will be the service area. To the rear of the service area, they have an area that's known as Parc Fermé. It's the French word for a closed park. So overnight, the cars are stored in this area. They're not allowed to be worked on, mechanics, tyres, anything like that. It cannot happen there. And every single car is given a due time out of Parc Fermé each morning. So we'll say car number one on the road will start the rally at 9:00. And I send the zeros for the minutes and the seconds. And he would be given a time card. This is one of the purposes of the core driver. A time card that will tell him he has 10 minutes to take the car from Parc Fermé into the service park, 20 minutes in the service park to put on the tyres. And we'll just imagine that the first stage would be Miles Gap, which is about 40 kilometres from Tralee. They would be given the best part of an hour to get from the service park to the start of Miles Gap. Why so long? They keep the rally cars below the legal speed limit, very much below the legal speed limit, until they get into the closed road. So that car moves along 30 kilometres an hour, 40 kilometres an hour, and arrives, and I think the word arrived is an important word, arrives at what is known as arrival control, mm-hmm, on a due time. And 3 minutes after the arrival, well, technically, without official delays or anything like that, 3 minutes after the arrival time, they go to the stage start. And that's when helmets on, it's racing as fast as you can from A to B, time to 100ths of a second. And then when you get to the finish car, you're also given another road book and a time card to get you from the finish to the next stage on a due time.
And typically, how many stages would you have on a day?
In the World Rally Championship, you'd have probably 3 to 4 stages before service, and that's that same loop repeated again in the afternoon. So you'll be
doing service is where I bring my car to finally and fix my bits and pieces.
Yes. So if you think now, this is not official, I'm just making up the potential route. Like, so if you think something like Miles Gap, Block B at Carrie Lake, and they finish in Carrie Lake after doing the first loop, they might be given an hour to get from Carrie Lake to back to Tralee. Repairs, wear and tear, new tyres, new brakes, whatever the case may be. But there's all sorts of rules following that. If they come off a stage with 2 punctures, they're not allowed driving the public highway with punctures. The race is over. A mechanical problem. It's a long distance from to finish a car at Lake to Tralee. If there's a mechanical problem, you're trying to nurse the car back into town. And again, when you come back into town, back into the service park, there's a due time. Each car has a due time to arrive into the service park, and the mechanics have X amount of minutes to work on the car. So in the morning might be 20 minutes, midday service would be maybe 45 minutes, and the evening time, the last service day, could be an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So,
and Ivan is standing in Block BMA. He's waiting for the service and the car to pass through. As a supporter then, Ivan, do you know what's actually happening? Do you know who's ahead and who's behind? Do you know the times the car's coming up? I mean, where do I find that as Donald standing in Block BMA?
Yeah, well, I suppose, depending on your phone coverage, the last time, as we mentioned last week, rallying is held in the most remote areas
that
of the world.
That is a very fair point, actually.
Yeah, you know, funny, as you know, as you kind of moved into this, like years ago, I remember with local rallies, it was a case of your programme was your start list and you'd your 1, 2, 3 down along of the numbers of the cars and who was where, and you kind of presumed they'd come in that order, and if car number 3 was missing, he either maybe went off on the stage beforehand or maybe he didn't start the rally at all, and it would kind of lead to questioning. And then they used to have printed out bulletins at the end of the day of all the time in the news, but obviously in the 21st century we've moved well away from that, and there's, you know, as we said last week, everything's streamed. You see people now even in Galway the weekend watching the coverage on their phones, and you know everything instantly. You know the cars could be still going on the stage, you know everything that's after happening. So kind of again moving into that 21st century, all the times now are instant online, everything comes in as it happens. Even so, often now the technology is so good that there could be the stage split up into 3 different parts on the time. So you know after the first maybe 4 kilometres of stage, this fella's up on that fella by a couple of seconds or a couple of point of a second, then by the second split he drops some more time. So like it's all live and you can tell how these cars are getting on through the stage until they get to the end of it. So so many ways to follow it now online. There's so much coverage in social media and people blogging and everything else. There's so much coverage of these things that it's very accessible.
And the timings, obviously, I mean, if you can do a stage, it's like the Tour of France in that sense. I mean, you keep your time, your 4 seconds up, your 6 seconds up for the whole lot, and then you have one bad stage. Every stage counts.
Every stage counts. It's a cumulative timing over the day, cumulative timing over the weekend. It's timed to 100ths of a second. Rallies have been lost, won and lost by 100ths of a second. And then it's important to notice, we go back to the timing we were talking about a few minutes ago, that if you're early or late to any of these appointed times during the day, you get penalised time as well. And it's actually funny that if you're early, you're going to get more penalties than if you're late, because if you're early, it suggests that you're speeding on the road sections, which is completely frowned upon. Right. And then if you're late, it could be 10 seconds per minute late, but it could be 1 minute per minute early. So it's imperative that you stick to the scheduled timing
and
all day.
And those timings, I mean, obviously through the World Championships, would you see a lot of fellas arriving early?
What
I know they shouldn't be, but
well,
I mean, obviously,
if you set it at say 50 kilometres an hour, yeah, and they're driving at 60 or 70 kilometres an hour, they're still well within the speed limit.
Right.
So what you'll see is they'll sit out the road 2 or 3 kilometres out the road and just sit and wait until a few minutes before their due time, or maybe in the case of the MTU, you've room to park cars on the entrance into the complex,
and they can't go fiddling with these cars now. Obviously, between that, they can't pull in for petrol or they can't get the mechanic out or anything.
No, there's no outside assistance allowed. The fuel, there will be a dedicated fueling area in the MTU, this very specific World Championship specification fuel that's actually only for the World Rally Championship, and it's one of these bioethanol type fuels. I'm not quite sure, but it's completely green, completely environmentally friendly fuel. Mechanics are not allowed travel out to the stages and change tyres or change engine components or anything like that. However, the crews are allowed to effect their own repairs with equipment carried on the car. So they may carry a small toolkit. I think one of the best tricks you'd see there on a weekend like just gone there, where the Galway Rally on Sunday started very, very wet, but the forecast had given for drying conditions. Mm-hmm. And what you'd see is the drivers would take 2 dry weather tyres in the boot, okay, have 4 wet ones on for the opening stage, and then when they get onto this road section, yep, in their road time,
change,
put the dry weather racing tyres on themselves. Other rallies, particularly the gravel and kind of off-road rallies, they raise and lower the suspension depending on the conditions that they're expecting. You see it in another good one is the Monte Carlo Rally. It's a great example of the stage could be complete tarmac or the stage could be sheet ice, and there could be sections in it, icy section and bone dry tarmac. What often is a spiked tyre on the front left, a spiked tyre on the back right, but a slick racing tyre on the opposing corners. There are all these kind of little tricks go on through the day. There's a great old story going back in the years of the lore of the Group E days, the famous international rally days, but the Lancia team had figured out that there was so much sheet ice in the second part of one of these stages in Monte Carlo, they actually put a service crew in on the mountain on the stage, and it was like a Formula 1 pit stop where they came off the dry racing tyres, pulled in 2-3 minutes to change a set of tyres onto spiked racing tyres to complete the test. And they calculated that the 2 or 3 minutes they take to do this was still less than what they drop in the 20 kilometres left on the stage on the sheet ice. But all them kind of skullduggery now are tightening up, all these rules now exist to prevent that kind of stuff happening. But it's part of the folklore of the sport, so there's no harm saying it.
But it's important. I mean, the folklore of the sport is what makes it legend and myth as well at different times, and I suppose it's what people fall in love with. Ivan, 30 seconds as a producer. I mean, we were talking about what we're looking forward to and the whole lot and the timing aspect of it. But it will give people on the roadside a great opportunity to see cars passing them just as regular Joes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, actually watching one of the videos from Monte Carlo going back a couple of weeks ago, they were showing just the crowds along the road section. So as you say, driving in from Carroll Lake or Block B into Tralee, there'd be people lining the towns out. You'd see tricolours, you'd see different flags out and about there, supporters of all these other fans flying in from Finland and Belgium and all these places with their tricolours out. Or, you know, these people would be moving in and out from stages. They might meet the lads on the stages. So look, it's very exciting for the villages and the towns in between the areas around Tralee as well. And you'll see people lining the roads ever, a bit like the Tour de France. They won't be in competition mode, but just to see the cars up close and if they're riding on the live stages, it's just as good to see them outside it as well.
Fair play to you. And of course, Ian Rally back here again next week for us as well, when we talk about drivers and venues and maybe the Swedish Grand Prix. Is that what you're on about? No,
the Swedish Rally is next up. Yeah, you're right. There's a couple of, there'll be Irish interest in the Swedish Rally, so we'll talk about
that next week, Sean. Listen, that's tonight's show. Thanks very much to Keane and Ivan, and Mary Hurley's up next with Talks Us.